It's time for the Las Vegas Sports Line.
Money won is twice as sweet as money earned.
And here we go. It's the Wednesday edition of the Las Vegas Sports Line. College basketball season is underway. NHL, NBA, NFL, college football. Am I missing anything? Wow. It is a busy time for both odds makers and bettors. And we love every bit of it. It's just a lot of fun right now to be a fan. It's a Kenny White Wednesday here. We have Kenny on every Wednesday to talk power ratings, projections, analyze some games. Wes Reynolds is here. I'm Dave Koken. Jared Justice is our producer. Hi, Kenny. How are you?
Hey, Dave and Wes. I'm doing great. And you're right. This is the busiest time of year. October, November are just crazy busy. But you're right. We love it.
Let's talk a little bit about what took place last night in the first night of the college basketball season. Wes, I know you watched both games as the two dogs won at the Champions Classic. Duke getting the best of Kansas and Kentucky beating Michigan State. What were your impressions?
Yeah, I mean, I thought Kansas really probably should have won the game when you have 27 turnovers, and it was really not just the guard play. It was the big guys throwing the ball away, and you got to have passing big guys in college basketball in this kind of pace and space era, and Kansas did not have them last night. Kentucky, I was a little impressed with. Of those four chalky teams, and I mentioned that yesterday on the show, Kentucky was the one that I liked the best and who I do like the best long-term. Thought they played good defense. This Tyrese Maxey kid is as good as advertised. He was the star of stars in Madison Square Garden last night.
Kenny, there's some... it's fair to say that I don't think the expectations are real high, and that's good, but I think there's some excitement locally with UNLV, with a new coach who I think is bringing a little swagger back to the program. And UNLV gets a nice opening night win. Good to start 1-0. It was certainly a game they were supposed to win, but taking care of business like that was solid.
Yeah, no doubt. Year one, obviously, a huge rebuilding year. But year two should be really good for the Rebels. I know that the coach has three or four transfers coming in that will be eligible next year that will all start.
Yeah, that's going to be strong. And I think, I don't know if this was on the air yesterday or not, but Wes, I believe you mentioned that the rumors that Nebraska might be not so good this year, that they've got some issues. Well, those were borne out a bit last night. That was the upset of the night as UC Riverside goes on the road as a 15-point dog, and they win outright by 19.
Yeah, the Huskers, they have one guy that was on scholarship last year on this roster for Tim Miles, and he's a reserve who only played 15 minutes. Don't ask me to pronounce his name. Thor something is his name. But, look, this kind of mirrors what Fred Hoiberg did at Iowa State. That first year was very choppy, and they weren't very good, and then he got it turned around real quick. And we know what he's going to do. He's going to build at least the bulk of his team based on transfers, and kind of a little bit what Musselman did at Nevada. That's what Hoiberg did at Iowa State that got them successful and on the right track. But yeah, I did not anticipate a 15.5-point underdog winning by 19 points and doing it with a very slow tempo. I think they were rated, it's just one game, but UC Riverside 351 in tempo.
Wow. Kenny, good information, really vital early in the season. What are some of the ways for our listeners to try and I'm not talking about getting inside information, but just getting good information that they can use on a daily basis in their handicapping?
My goodness, that's such a tough question, Dave. But you know how hard it is with so many teams. That boy, I don't know. And I'm gonna say, for someone who doesn't have a lot of time and they like to play, last night's games were kind of the way you want to look at betting. And Wes is right. Kansas should have won the game. I'd play Kansas again in that situation. The line moved, though, from Duke -4 to Kansas -2. But I think the limits were very low, and that number was opened in faraway places at -4. But when you start to look at line movements like that in the marquee matchups, usually it goes the bookmaker's way, and it did last night.
Yep.
And the other one, number one team in the country's been hearing how good they are for the last 30 days, and the other team's been hearing they're playing the number one team in the country. So it's just kind of, I think, common sense. If you just want to bet those big games, look for the dog and look to try to go against go with the sports book and look to go against some of those favorites in those situations. The other games, you can't. Don't bet against the line movement in those other games, the smaller games, because that's where all the information's at.
Exactly. I mean, that's great advice right there. And last night we saw it all over the place. The numbers that were getting steamed, they didn't get there. Clemson didn't get there. Bradley didn't get there. Obviously, Kansas didn't get there. There are a couple others as well that didn't get there. I think UC Irvine didn't get there. On the main board, fading the steam chasers is not a bad idea. But you're right, on the extra game board, be careful about going against those line moves.
Yeah, there's some tough ones. I talked to a couple of people yesterday. It was funny because one person I talked to has a lot of relationships in the coaching world, and he gave me three games of guys that he knows very well that coach on staffs. They all told him their team was no good and was going to lose, and he bet against all three, and all three teams that the coaching staff thought they were going to lose covered the spread easily in all three.
We'll touch on more college basketball later on, but we got a big weekend of football coming up. Boy, there's some good matchups, and let's break down some of the games. Kenny can tell us about what the projections are showing. We'll tell you how you can get those projections and power ratings for your own use, because they are tremendously valuable. Let's start off with a Thursday night game. And Kenny, Temple was sailing along, impressing a lot of people, playing tremendous red zone defense. But the last 2 weeks, they've really gotten punched in the mouth. Now they have to go down to Tampa and face South Florida.
Yeah, they did get punched in the mouth. Amazing, though. But the two teams they faced, SMU and UCF, the two best teams in the conference, and South Florida, I just don't trust Charlie Strong. I think I had this team overrated at the beginning of the year, but they're 5-3 ATS, and I think I've lost all three games that they lost betting on them. They're just not a team that I've done well back and forth against, but I would have to back Temple here. I think they're just the better team. The better coach is Ron Carey. Both teams like to go a little up-tempo. I was kind of surprised to see that. They're both above average in getting plays off, so the only problem is neither offense has done well. Both below average offenses, average defenses on both. But I'm going to trust Temple in this game. I think laying a short price here, they win the game.
Kenny, ACC battle here for some teams battling for bowl eligibility, and I think an interesting handicap, and that would be Florida State now with the interim coach Odell Haggins, as Willie Taggart was shown the door. Maybe the check from Burt Reynolds' estate cleared down in Tallahassee, and somebody wanted Willie Taggart out bad enough to put up about $20 million.
Unreal.
But it's Haggins for the rest of the season. Who knows who it is next season? Bob Stoops, whoever is being rumored out there. But they're going up to Chestnut Hill to face Boston College, who, of course, people know are without their quarterback, Anthony Brown, and really a run-heavy team. And Boston College, about 2.5 market consensus right now.
Yeah, since Anthony Brown went out there, BC's running at about 75% of the time, but they're still playing that up-tempo offense. They're to the line of scrimmage. And that's, you know, usually you think up-tempo, you think in passing, but the up-tempo's working for BC, that they're gaining yards on the ground because teams aren't able to adjust, and they're wearing defenses out. The problem is they're wearing their own defense out. Mm-hmm. They give up more yards per play than they get. So I think Florida State's going to take a nice deep breath, relax, and say, you know what? Let's go have some fun and play some football. And they play fast as well. At 62 in this game, I think far too low. I think this one goes flying over the total. These two haven't played that many high-scoring games in their past, but I think this one's going to be an over game.
Yeah, I have a tendency to agree on what you're saying about them being relaxed and having fun. I think they put the right guy in charge for the rest of the season, a guy who's, you know, been around forever. I think he's liked by the players, and I'm not sure Taggart was. Got a feeling Florida State might be okay the rest of the season. Here's a big game, huge game, and we'll talk about where you have the number, but also about the situation here as Penn State takes on Minnesota. And if I'm P.J. Fleck, and I'm not, certainly, but I can almost guarantee you that P.J. Fleck went into the meeting today with the players and said, well, we're unbeaten, we've been blowing teams out, and they've got us ranked 13th in the first of the official playoff rankings. That is, it's easy to sell a team on getting no respect at all when you see a number like that. How much do you factor something like that into this matchup this weekend with the Nittany Lions?
Yeah, that's I don't know, Dave. I'm not really factoring much of that in. I'm guessing Penn State saying, "Hey, we're playing the 13th ranked team in the country. on the road. You know, some of these guys, they don't know what the point spread is or if there is one. I just don't know the percentage of guys that do. Big game for both teams, but Minnesota, obviously fraudulent 13th team in the country. They have not played a really good defense yet. The two best defenses they played was San Diego State and Nebraska. And those are the two lowest scoring games they've had, 34 and 28. That's pretty good, though. I mean, their scores are amazing, but the schedule they played is ridiculously bad. I have Penn State's defense 10.5 points better than the average defense that Minnesota's played so far. I'm looking at this game that, you know, I made Penn State 6, and that's what the projections show. But I think Penn State's going to beat them because I've continued to raise Minnesota's rating because they continue to cover spreads at 5-2-1. But, you know, those are against easy teams. This is a little bit different when you're playing against a really solid football team. And I like what Sean Clifford's done. Penn State's battle-tested, obviously. They played Michigan State, Michigan, and Iowa. Three straight big games in a row. And they're just battle-tested. Minnesota's not tested anybody yet. I got a feeling Penn State wins the game. I do like the game under. I think it's going to be a lower-scoring game. Minnesota will struggle offensively in this one.
And P.J. Fleck just got that big contract extension yesterday, so if it's anything like a player, when they get the money, sometimes it's good to go against them in that spot. But, yeah, I would agree with Kenny on the under. The other big game, of course, LSU and Alabama, and we talked about this game yesterday with Jeff Sherman from Westgate Superbook USA. And looking at the price here, 6.5, pretty much market consensus. I got to think that's price with knowing or thinking that Tua is going to play on Saturday. I think it would take the Alabama National Guard for him to keep him from seeing the field on Saturday. But we're seeing 6.5, a little bit of dip this morning in the total to as low as 63 on the board. But it's going to get two-way action, Kenny. I mean, you're going to get the number one team in the AP pool as almost a touchdown underdog is going to see money, and Alabama is going to see money laying less than a touchdown.
Yeah, you got that right. 100%, I agree that this will be a great two-way betting game. I would be shocked if it ever got to 7. I think 6.5 is probably the betting number. The total, the last 10 years, the highest total these two have played to is 54. That was the total, the betting total, 54. The average total between these two teams, 46. We're looking at 17 points over what the average is of these two teams. And, you know, I could make an argument for it. LSU's got a great offense, and they're putting up 47 a game, and Alabama puts up 48. And Alabama plays anywhere between 4 to 7 freshmen on defense at a time. So that's their weakness. My numbers are really pretty close. I made Alabama 7. I think that the total should be in the low 60s, but I got a feeling this is going to be LSU an under football game.
Kenny, Sooner Nation is not happy. The team lost 2 weeks ago, and, you know, obviously they didn't figure to be one of the top four teams in the rankings, but they're down quite a ways now. They're going to have to jump over a bunch of teams. And I always look at situations like that, especially if it's an offensive team, and say, boy, if they get a chance for some style points, they're liable to try and add them. This might be a weekend where that comes into play as they face a good Iowa State team. Is this a spot where Oklahoma tries to take Iowa State behind the woodshed if they're able to?
Yeah, you know, it's funny, Dave, how things have changed. I guess now with the college playoff system and you have four teams in it, I used to always love the angle of teams who had those championship aspirations when they lost a game. The next week, they just didn't show up.
Yep.
But it's just that it's changed. I haven't found a spot like that yet this year. This could be as close as maybe I can get to it. I've tried to find that spot with Central Florida. I did beat them one game with East Carolina, but it was kind of a comeback win. This one here, Iowa State, they disappoint me. I thought they'd both be 8-0. I thought this would be an undefeated football game. I thought this would be Minnesota-Penn State. I'd have never thought Minnesota-Penn State would have been 8-0, but this one I would have said yes. Iowa State has lost by one point to Iowa in a game they outplayed Iowa. They lost by 2 to Baylor, and then they lost to a touchdown by Oak State. And they lost the turnover battle. They outgained Oak State in the game by 66 yards. I think Oklahoma takes this team lightly. They beat them last year in Iowa State by 10. It's a revenge game. You're coming off that loss. I think Iowa State's in this game the entire football game, and I think it's going to be very high scoring because both teams' offenses definitely outweigh their defenses. They're both high-scoring football teams. So, I like Iowa State plus the points. I like over in the game.
Battle for the Heartland Trophy here. I always love these trophy rivalry games. Iowa against Wisconsin. It's been really one-way traffic. Wisconsin's won 6 of the last 7. Arguably the lowest total on the board this week. 2 top 6 nationally in total defense. Now, that's not taking into advanced analytics or the schedule the teams are playing. Also top 4 in the nation's scoring defense. And just wondering maybe if Wisconsin, look, they had their undefeated bubble busted 3 weeks ago at Illinois and then Ohio State. Both teams come in off a bye. Points, I would think, would be at a premium, but is this total at 38 still just slightly too low?
Too low or too high, Wes?
Do you think it's too low?
Too low, yeah. Defense, like you mentioned, the defenses are everything, these two teams, and the pace of play. I've got Wisconsin 252nd out of 256 teams, 32.2 seconds in between plays when they snap it. In Iowa, 29 seconds. They're 212. These are two of the, you know, this type of matchup. This is going to be a snail's pace. They both love to run the football. Wisconsin at 65%, and Iowa will get the, you know, they're going to run it about 55%. So a lot of running, two quarterbacks that are very accurate. I just don't think the clock stops very much here, and these defenses have been tremendous. You mentioned the numbers. I have Wisconsin number 3. Yards per play allowed at 3.7. And you look at some of the scores, I guess the pass scores are fairly high, but you get some low ones in 2015 and 2016, really low scores. That's kind of what I'm looking at this game. I think it's going to be a lower scoring football game. In college football, the last 6 years, totals of 38.5 and under, 38.5 and under have gone under 63% of the time. So I'm expecting this to be an under game.
You can follow Kenny White on Twitter at K Whitey Vegas, right?
Hey, Whitey Vegas, yes, that's right.
Is. I don't have it in front of me.
I haven't been tweeting that much, though. I haven't had time with all these sports going on.
I know.
Trying to get ready for college basketball. I just don't know time to tweet.
And let people know how they can find out more about getting your plays and your numbers and good stuff like that.
Yeah, everything's at the website. I made it nice and easy. KennyWhiteSports.com, the projection website, or you can purchase my plays for a day, a week, a month. Try me out. See how I'm going. The best time of year is right now with college football and college basketball both together. So appreciate that, Dave.
NFL, got a pretty good Thursday night game. Rivalry. And it's a game with a lot of meaning for these two teams. The Chargers have suddenly found their way back into the right side of the win-loss column. And the Raiders, you got to tip your cap to John Gruden. He's done a really good job with this football team, and they're better than I thought they were. This looks like a really good game tomorrow night.
Yeah, it does. It's a rivalry game. The road team's done well. 7 out of the last 9 they've covered. And Chargers have played well under this coach in November. They're 8-1 ATS. Mm. Chargers are a team we see. They get better as the year goes along. Oakland, I've never seen. John Gruden has brought in more players. He has brought in, I would say, 5 times as many players into this organization than any other team in the NFL. They just can't find, I don't know if they've found the right mix or not. They played well this week against Detroit. I still have them rated very low. I've got them rated in the bottom 5 of the NFL, and their quarterback's good, but their defense, I think, is very, very weak, especially the secondary. Number 31 in the NFL in yards allowed passing. This might be a Charger team that's, you know, maybe ready to turn it on. They had a lot of injuries early in the season, but they did look good this past weekend. I think it was more Green Bay not showing up, maybe with a 7-1 record, coming in a little bit cocky in that football game. But I think the Chargers are the better football team here. We'll see how this one pans out. It's a big game for both teams, but I think the Chargers win the game.
Sunday night game here with the Minnesota Vikings off that loss in Kansas City against the Dallas Cowboys, once again hosting on Sunday Night Football. I'm looking at Dallas Monday night. It was like they were good enough. I mean, basically is how I would categorize that against the...
Final score was misleading.
Yes, it was, but against the New York Giants, because I think with Dallas, you're kind of looking, are we going to see that team that beat Philadelphia a couple weeks ago on Sunday Night Football that looked like, okay, this is a real contender in the NFC, or are we going to see that team that did lose 3 in a row? Line's currently 3, total 48. Interested in your thoughts on this one, because this is one of the tougher ones for me to call.
Yeah, it is a tough one. I think the line was right, Wes, and what Cowboy team shows up, you know, first half, second half, and one thing I did find is Garrett's actually been okay on the road in the second half of games when he's losing. He's actually made some decent adjustments in road games. I don't know why that is, but home has not been successful. Cousins and the Vikings continued to get hammered everywhere by all the media about how they don't play well against teams with a winning record. Kind of shows up. They're 3-12 ATS, their last 15 against teams with a winning record. So we'll find out how good Minnesota is. I think they're a very good football team. I think they're slightly better, but Dallas is good too. I've got both teams rated in the top five in the NFC. This is a great battle. I would say this game might be an under game. This total has already moved up from 45.5 to 48. A game that I'll probably look to maybe play under because I do like both defenses as well.
Yeah, and I think you had that power rated, I believe, at 44 for this game. So that's a decent enough variance, yeah. I think, yeah. For a play, for sure.
That definitely counts as, enough of an advantage in the NFL total.
Let me back up to the regular schedule and look at the Rams-Steelers game. This is a fascinating game to me because the Steelers can rush the passer, and we've seen that Jared Goff has had a lot of problems when dealing with pressure this year. He seems to have regressed some for the Rams. The Steelers, the personnel just isn't there right now, but I'll give Mike Tomlin credit. I mean, he's found a way to get this team back to .500, grinding things out. Pittsburgh's never an easy place to play. This looks to me to be one of the more interesting Sunday matchups.
Yeah, no, Dave, you're right, it is. I favor the Rams. They're the better football team, and Pittsburgh has gotten back into it here with a couple of wins against, you know, some weak teams. They did a good job in L.A. to beat the Chargers, but their schedule sets up nicely. I talked about Pittsburgh 3 weeks ago looking at their schedule. After the Rams, it's a really downhill at Cleveland, at Cincinnati, Cleveland again at home, Arizona, Buffalo, the Jets, and then they finish up with Baltimore. At that time, they could be playing for the division against the Ravens, and their entire team has gotten more experience, and their quarterback, Mason Rudolph, more experience at that point. But I don't think they're ready for the Rams in this one. I think that Sean McVay has got they've made some nice deals to kind of strengthen up their secondary and their defensive front, and the Rams, I think, are ready to go. I think they're ready to really start to get on that run. And they know they need to because they've got Seattle and San Francisco in their division. And they know that a playoff spot's going to be tough to get if they don't play well the rest of the way.
And a good segue there, Kenny, because we're going to Seattle and San Francisco. That the Monday night game, a rare occurrence anymore when the Monday night football slot actually has the biggest game of the week.
Boy, they got it this time.
Yeah, they suffered through having the Dolphins and the Jets and all these other teams to get to Week 10 Monday night football. Seattle, San Francisco, and look, with Seattle, this is a team that I want to find a spot to fade them because I think they've been fortunate in a lot of games this year, but going against an 8-0 team that's leading the division, this isn't the spot, and I really couldn't get there on this one. I think the price looks actually pretty right to me.
Yeah, I agree. This will be a game that I'm definitely going to want to play in-game or at halftime in the second half. Seattle's defense has been underwhelming, and I didn't think they were going to be a good defense coming in. I wanted to fade Seattle from the beginning of the year. Last year I was on them. Everybody hated Seattle. I was on Seattle. They played well. This year, though, with Russell Wilson signing that big contract, you talked about P.J. Fleck signing one. Mm-hmm. Well, when Russell Wilson signed his, I thought, well, there goes Russell Wilson, but boy, was I wrong. This guy has come out and had an MVP-type year, so no defense for Seattle, good offense. I hate going over on Monday night because those totals are always going to be inflated, but I think it's the only way I can look. And like I said, I'll probably wait in-game, maybe if they get off to a slow start, and look to bet that over because I do like Kyle Shanahan as an offensive coach. And with Russell Wilson the way he's playing, we could get a lot of points scored in the second, third, and fourth quarters if we get a slow start in the first quarter of that football game. So maybe look at that in-game there on the over.
And, you know, may as well mention this. I mean, obviously Russell Wilson is just having a phenomenal year, as you said. Jimmy Garoppolo, maybe the last of the 49ers to catch fire.
Mm-hmm.
He'd been kind of struggling through the first 5 or 6 weeks, but he has put together back-to-back big games. So the 49ers actually looking really good right now.
They're a good football team. I've had a rating, Dave, and San Francisco has put themselves up there in the top six in the NFL, and they really are. Chan has done a really good job of bringing in the right talent. Next pick with Nick Bosa and Jimmy Garoppolo. Right, has started slow, but Jimmy G is amazing. That the only two undefeated teams last week were the Patriots and the 49ers, and it was Garoppolo, Brady. But here now in San Francisco, with the best record.
Yep. Kenny, it's always a pleasure, man. Great information, as always.
Thanks,
once
guys.
Again, let people know once again about the website and how inexpensive it is to get your advice.
Yeah, easy to get there. You're right, KennyWhiteSports.com. Try it out for a day, a week, or the month. Get all the plays, $249 for the entire month. Every play that I have in the NFL, college football, college basketball. If I got a hockey player, NFL play, I'll throw it up there as well.
Thanks, Kenny. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Kenny.
Best of luck to everybody.
When we come back, Wes and I will tell you about our Joe's Angle of the Day from Ralph Michaels. And this involves teams leading in the fourth quarter and then blowing games in back-to-back weeks. What happens to them after that?
The Las Vegas Sports Line.
Hello, friends. This is Thomas Johnson from Joe's Seafood Prime Steak and Stone Crab. Need a great idea for lunch or dinner? Your best bet is Joe's, one of the most popular dining destinations on the Strip. Joe's provides the ideal setting for private parties with accommodations for up to 150 guests. Stop by to see us at the Forum Shops at Caesars and ask for Thomas Johnson, your maitre d'.
And don't forget to make reservations at Joe's if you're going in the evening, 702-792-9222. Joe's open for lunch daily at 11:30 as well. So this doesn't happen very often, but when it does, it sounds like a fade situation, and in fact, it is. Teams that go into the fourth quarter with the lead and then lose in consecutive games, what happens to them the next time out? Well, the Washington Huskies fit that situation. They are off two games where they led going into the fourth quarter against Oregon, and they led going into the fourth quarter against Utah, and they lost both games. So now they're in a situation where it kind of makes some sense to fade them, and indeed, that has been the way to go, because teams in that situation, going back several years now, 6 wins against the spread, 19 losses, and one game landing on the number. That's, 25 games is depends on what you're looking at. It can be a small sample for certain things, but for an angle like this that doesn't occur that often, in that logically does figure, there's a logical rationale as to why this would work. And 25 games is a decent sample size, and it's been a really bad fit for teams that are off this scenario where they've lost back-to-back games that they led in the fourth quarter. I think it bodes well for Oregon State to have a chance to upset Washington on Friday night.
Yeah, I was looking at this game. This is the late Friday night game. Washington about 10-point favorite pretty much across the board. And look, are they a better team than Oregon State talent-wise? Of course they are.
Sure.
But look, Oregon State's all of a sudden got some optimism. They hadn't been to a bowl game in several years. They're 4-4, so they're only a couple games away. I think they've got some hope.
And Washington is 5-4, which is not where they expected
to be. Yeah, I mean, people expected them to be, I think, a dark horse contender for the college football playoff, and it's like, now the best they could do is a minor bowl, so are they kind of just going to, you know, hey, we're just going to play out the string here? And Oregon State, I got to say, you at least know you're going to get an effort out of the underdog, which is what you're always looking for, first and foremost.
I think I look at this now. Here's the way I approach these games, because there is a big talent differential. Washington is, I mean, their roster is much better than Oregon State's. I look at these as first half plays.
Mm-hmm.
I know Oregon State's coming out really excited to be on national TV on Friday night and a chance to put themselves in great position to get to a bowl game. And Washington's always a big opponent for them. The Huskies, if they're going to be flat, they're going to be flat early.
6 is the number, by the way, for the first half, if you want to take the Beavs at home. Led by former Beaver quarterback Jonathan Smith, and he's all of a sudden got them going, because that program's been dead for
terrible.
Several years up in Corvallis.
And they made a couple of bad hires,
including
the guy who's now at Utah State.
Yeah, exactly. So Jonathan Smith, I think, has got them at least going in a positive direction again. And this team could score a bunch of points, too. They've been putting up big numbers offensively. Now, they don't stop a lot of teams, but they've been able to be in games.
I think with that angle that Ralph Michaels provided in reading the teams the way I do, I think I might be making a first-half bet.
I think that's a good look.
I think that's a decent take. And look, if Washington comes out right, then it's going to be a loser. But I think there's a good chance Washington won't come out right in this game. Let's look at some stuff tonight. Let's bounce around some basketball in the NBA. We haven't touched on this on the NBA yet today. The team formerly known as the Golden State Warriors.
The Santa Cruz Warriors.
Well, they're going to Houston tonight. If it's last year, this is a great matchup. Not so much now, and Houston's obviously a big favorite.
Yeah, and Houston actually got their first win of the season, that being against the spread. They were 0-6, barely covered in Memphis, but barely cover is still a cover. So Houston got off the schneid in that regard. Looks like Eric Gordon going to be downgraded to out tonight. Russell Westbrook should be back in the lineup. And, of course, we know the injuries for the Warriors. Green, Curry, D'Angelo Russell also not going to play tonight. Evans and Looney have been out. Clay out. So that's the six guys that you were going to be playing and have either starting or playing heavy minutes. So, yeah, I don't want – even though that was a nice effort by the Warriors the other night against Portland and as double-digit underdogs – look, if Steve Kerr does get this team somehow like in the eight spots, which I don't think is going to happen. He's coach of the century.
Oh, boy.
With this bunch. But, yeah, I don't really like to lay this big of a number in the NBA, but I darn sure don't want the Warriors.
The nightcap of tonight's national TV twin bill, a little more enticing as the Milwaukee Bucks arrive at Staples Center to take on the Los Angeles Clippers.
And another load management game for one Kawhi Leonard on ESPN in a primetime game. I'm starting to think Doc Rivers is like Greg Popovich Jr. He does not give two craps about if this game is on television or the TV contract. If he's going to sit him out, he's going to sit him out. So, unfortunately, they can't really flex this game. It'll still be a good game even without Kawhi, but the other kind of late 6:05 Pacific time line our game that looks good actually is Philadelphia at Utah. You get a Philadelphia team off their first loss of the season in Phoenix. Joel Embiid should be back in the lineup off his two-game suspension for the fight with Karl Anthony Towns. But look, they go to Utah. That's always a tough place to play, and they're 4-3, maybe slightly disappointing, but their defense has been really good. I think they're number one in the league in field goal defense.
The defense is really good, but I don't know if you call him a liability at this point, but Ben Simmons, completely unwilling to shoot the basketball from outside, and with good reason, he can't make a shot. But, I mean, that does kind of compromise their offense.
Yeah, you need him because you know that Al Horford, I mean, he could do a little pick and pop, but Al Horford's in there to defend and rebound, which he is very good at doing, and also be an adult in the locker room. And I think that's a big reason why they got him as a free agent from Boston. But look, I do like the matchup down low. I mean, it's as good as it gets. Joel Embiid against Rudy Gobert, who really is, I think, the best defensive center in the NBA in terms of in the post. So Utah -2. Looks like it's seeing good two-way action. I would lean to the under in this game. I think Philadelphia, this is a pretty tough defense that they're going to face. So I'm seeing under 211, 210.5. I think the under might be the way to go out in Utah tonight.
On the college side, I love what the ACC is doing. I know Jim Larrañaga wasn't real happy about it last night, and I guess said so. But I love what the ACC is doing because most of the time we've got, you know, garbage against powerhouse early on, except for the occasional tournament games, and it's not much to watch. But the ACC, in order to satisfy the ACC network.
Exactly. I was just going to say that.
You know, sometimes TV does us good as fans. We've got some terrific games that count for these teams early on. Saw some last night. We've got more tonight. Notre Dame and North Carolina matching up. They played an exciting game last year. I think it was a one-point game. The Irish have got a lot of people back. Mike Bray is an excellent coach with ample prep time. North Carolina's got the better personnel overall, but get the impression this could be a close game.
Yeah, I think so, too. I would lean to Notre Dame. I want to see maybe a 10 show again because it's currently 9.5 across the board. Notre Dame brings back all their starters, including one that was a part-time starter, that being Rex Pfluger, the kid from Santa Ana Modern Day in California, who got hurt in the middle of the season and then couldn't go. Notre Dame was really ravaged with injuries last year. And this is a tough game, and this is a new North Carolina team that lost a lot of personnel. They're always going to have talent there under Roy.
They're athletically, clearly going to be the more athletically gifted team.
But they've got a lot of new personnel on that team that they've got. I think this is a team that could be better later in the year and a lot more dangerous, but maybe this is the time to get them right now. I don't disagree with the move on the Irish.
Another ACC game, and this was one look, I'm one who reads the line and tries to assess the numbers in terms of determining a winner sometimes, and I think pretty good example of it tonight is Virginia at Syracuse, where the defending champions are on the road against the team they throttled last year in this building. By the way, I don't recollect for sure, but might have been the worst home loss of Boeheim's career. I mean, they just got murdered in the second half of that game. So here's Virginia going in against a Syracuse team that's got a lot of new personnel. Man, it looks easy to take Virginia only -3. And when I see that, my impulse is to go the other way, particularly since the line, last I checked, hadn't moved at all. I think I like Syracuse here.
And I agree with you, and I'm on the orange as well. Look, I don't think Virginia is going to totally fall off the map like some people are thinking.
Because
Tony Bennett's built a hell of a culture down there in Charlottesville, and they're going to stay a nightmare of a team to play and prepare for. But you're right. Last year, actually, Syracuse, this is on senior night up in the Carrier Dome. Syracuse actually had a halftime lead. Got outscored 47-19, and Virginia essentially brings back one starter from that team. That's the kid Kehi Clark that made the great pass to get them to the Final Four for that basket to Jaquite, who was their sixth man, who's coming back this year. But I think Syracuse is going to be a little bit more ready for him. I know they lose a couple guys in the backcourt, but yeah, I was reading between the line here. I thought that was a very tepid or lukewarm favoritism line for Virginia. So I think Syracuse, look, home opener, ACC. I'm wondering how this is going to affect teams, though, later in the season, but it forces you to be ready from the get-go. You don't have time to work out the kinks.
I love it. I wish more conferences would do it and then play your non-conference games after that, but get the season started in an exciting fashion. Now, here's a non-conference game. It's not really a rivalry if you're looking at football. But in basketball, given the history of the two programs, you can make a case there's some rivalry here, even though they're not in the same conference. Cincinnati taking on Ohio State.
And money has, somewhat surprisingly, it's not really when the fact that, look, it's more biased towards the overs to start the season because the officiating, they're a little more heavy on the quote-unquote points of emphasis, and you see a lot more fouls call, and then in January they get tired of it, and it's like, okay, do what you want and play. And so, I mean, this was a really low-scoring game last year when they played in Cincinnati. It was 64-56. I believe with 10 minutes to go, the score was 43-32 in favor of Ohio
State.
That's
some ugly ball right there.
But yet you're seeing the move to the over tonight, and you're seeing 143. I don't necessarily – sometimes you go with the move, and sometimes you go against the move.
How much of that might have to do with a perception there's going to be a change in style in Syracuse with the new coach?
I think that's part of it because John Brannan is the new coach of Cincinnati, and people, if they remember that name, he was at Northern Kentucky in Highland Heights, Kentucky, which is like about 8 minutes away from University of Cincinnati, so it's like right across the river almost basically up the interstate. So, I do think that they're going to maybe be a little bit more offensive oriented. I mean, we're used to Cincinnati for about 25, 30 years under Bob Huggins and Mick Cronin. Defense, rebounding, punch you in the mouth, rock fight type of games.
If you wanted to make up a list of the 10 programs most likely to get into a brawl, Cincinnati would certainly be on that list. And that's the way they want it to play. I don't know that the tradition's going to change. That is Cincinnati basketball.
Yeah, I think so, too. That's why I think this move to the over is maybe a little slightly curious. And on the contrast, look at the one of the late games tonight, Long Beach State at UCLA. Mick Cronin, now in Westwood at UCLA. Unders getting bet because they know Mick Cronin's representation his tradition as a defensive coach. But it takes time. I think it takes longer for guys to buy into defensive principles than it does to an offensive change.
I agree with that.
I really do, especially when you've got more young players in college basketball playing than ever. I mean, Mike Krzyzewski is famous for saying, I heard him in an interview once say, it takes 1 year at least for a player to learn how to play good defense at the collegiate level. Well, at some place like Duke, then that 1 year passes and he's gone to the NBA. So, I mean, that's just the way it goes. But I think on the Cincinnati-Ohio State, I think I may come back on the under, and I think you will see some buyback at this point.
On the ice, I had a winner on this game last night, and it was the strangest ending. I've never seen this happen before. You can find the highlight easily enough because it was just crazy. St. Louis Blues and Edmonton Oilers. Excuse me, Vancouver Canucks playing last night. 1-1. They go to overtime. And Vancouver had two... It's 3-on-3 in the overtime, okay? Two of the Vancouver players crashed into each other. The third one was behind the play. And the Blues ended up with a 3-on-0 breakaway. And they scored. I mean, 3-on-0, you know. It's going to be kind of tough for the goalie to make a stop. And, you know, Markstrom gave it the old college try, but the Blues did score. And it's nice to be on the right side of that one, because that would have been a painful loser. It was just, you got to see the play to believe it. I've watched. Obviously, the 3-on-3 hasn't been around for that long, but I've certainly I never saw that before, and it was just kind of like a cartoon watching it. But because it was my side, I was very happy about it. The Blues are in action again tonight. They go into Edmonton to face the Oilers. Oilers coming off an overtime loss of their own. Probably Jake Allen for St. Louis tonight. Binnington will more than likely get the night off. He was sensational yet again for the Blues last night. Boy, if you thought last season was a fluke with him as a rookie goaltender standing on his head for the Blues as they won the Stanley Cup, you better think again. This guy is really, really good. Great instincts, and just, he has the savvy of a goalie who's been in the league for 10 years. Jake Allen, the major drop-off to Jake Allen. Mike Smith probably in nets for Edmonton tonight, and Mike Smith was one of the NHL's three stars last week. He had a couple of brilliant performances for the Oilers. The bad news is, you want to bet Edmonton, you're going to have to lay about $1.50. So, you know, that's pricey against the defending champs. I suspect I'm going to pass tonight. The other game didn't interest me. The Rangers are at home against the pathetic Red Wings. But one of the weird stats in this one, Jimmy Howard, for whatever reason, has owned the Rangers throughout his career and loves to play at Madison Square Garden. Detroit, though, basically unbettable at this point. Wes, that's a bad team.
Yeah, it's really bad. I mean, them and the Ottawa Senators, it's kind of a race for who the worst team in the league. And look, the Rangers aren't too far behind in that regard either. But to the St. Louis-Edmonton game, the nightcap, two best teams in the Western Conference so far this year, St. Louis and Edmonton.
Not sure Edmonton will stay there.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, I'm a little surprised with St. Louis. I'm very impressed. Coming off a Stanley Cup victory, potential hangover, and to be 10-3-3 through 16 games is impressive.
I think something, and it makes no sense, but we've seen it many times in sports, and I think we're seeing it right now at least. When a team loses its best player, they galvanize. And I think the Blues came out of the gate a little bit sluggish. And then Tarasenko gets hurt. And he's going to be out probably until close to the playoffs.
Yeah.
They've been paying attention to detail since then. They're getting back to playing that style that they played last year. They are rarely out of position. And they're a tough team to score goals against. And on nights where their offense, even last night, their offense really didn't do much in the game. They managed to find a way to win it anyway. Tough team. Berube's done a great job with them.
Well, you know that they're well coached in St. Louis, and you also know that very few teams in the league can match up to that defensive style, because the NHL, I think, has become more offensive-oriented, but those teams that can really grind you down like a St. Louis, that puts it in their favor. So I would lean to the Blues tonight, but I'm probably going to pass.
And by the way, congratulations to the Golden Knights. They go on the road, pick up a win over Columbus. I thought they needed a good game last night where they didn't blow a third-period lead, which they did in the last couple of games. Good performance last night as they end up with a 2-1 victory, low-scoring game. The offense really not clicking the way it's capable of right now, so it's important for the Golden Knights to pick up 2 points in a game where they had some trouble mounting offense. A nice way to start the trip.
Yeah, absolutely. And they got another big one tonight. They go up north of the border to the Six to face the Toronto Maple Leafs. So that should be a very exciting game. The Leafs are a very fun team to watch. I'll be interested to see if Tavares is back for the Leafs.
He came back last game.
Did he?
And he,
okay.
And he missed a wide-open net, by the way.
Okay.
So a little bit of rust. I mean, the goalie had vanished from the proceedings. They hadn't pulled the goalie. He was just completely out of position and was quick. Who, by the way, it's over.
Yeah.
Look, I know enough about hockey to tell you this. Jonathan Quick is constantly out of position right now. Constantly. He's just a sieve.
It's like watching an old fighter at this point, Dave.
Yep, yep. It's a shame to see, because he was a great goaltender for a lot of years. A break time will come back. Rob Vino with the marquee matchup.
For more angles and information, follow Ralph Michaels at CalSportsLV on Twitter.
What's hot today? It's time for the Wager Talk marquee matchup of the night. WagerTalk.com. Start winning now.
All right, we're going to have to come up with our own marquee matchup because Rob Pino is unavailable today. So let's look up and down the schedule and see what we can find. Well, we haven't talked about any matching, and we have more matching tonight in college football. Good rivalry. You know, it's not as, like, it's not LSU Alabama. It's not Oklahoma Texas, okay? But Ohio hosting Miami of Ohio tonight. And at the MAC level, this is actually a really good and intense rivalry, Wes.
Yeah, it's the battle for the bricks. I always love these rivalry names. And look, these teams have been facing since 1908, so a lot of history. But if you look at recent history, it's been Frank Solich and the Bobcats that have really been owning the series. They've won 11 of the 14 meetings. Miami finally broke a five-year losing streak last season, won as 4.5-point underdogs by two. I always wonder, and I think these two teams are even, and so it's just a lean at this point. It may be a play in a couple hours, but Frank Solich, of course, is 75 years old and still the head coach at Ohio. You always wonder if he's like a year away or this is going to be his last year for retirement. And
and I was going to mention that you wonder about this season because the Bobcats were picked by many to win the MAC this year. You know, with Nathan Rourke back, I know they lost Ouellette, who was a vital part of their running game, but they looked like a team that might win the MAC this year, and it really hasn't worked out. They've been a bit of a disappointment.
Yeah, they have. Now, I think they're both actually tied for the lead.
Oh, yeah, they're still very much in
the division. So the winner of this is going to have the lead going into next week, which is essentially week 12 of the college football season. But, you know, Ohio has not covered a game at home yet this season. They're 0-4 against the number. So no time, I guess, like the present. Miami hasn't won in this stadium, Peden Stadium in Athens, since 2005. So my lean at this point would have to be Ohio, but like we were talking about this before the break, before we came back with the segment, it's hard to lay points
in
the MAC.
Yeah, you know, I'm kicking myself because I think we talked about it yesterday, and I know for my clients, I sent this out on the notes yesterday. I leaned to Ohio, Ball State last night.
Right.
And I should have played it.
Yeah.
I mean, I just should have played it. That looked like an even game going in. It was, and sometimes I get a little bit too conservative, and I should have just taken the. I didn't get the number I wanted. I wanted 7, and I didn't get it. It's like, well, I get stubborn sometimes with lines.
There was a scare late in that game, too, because Western Michigan got the ball back. Quarterback breaks the run, and he just goes down. He's got a wide-open end zone where he could have scored. So
That would have been a terrible beat.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because that was a game where Ball State was the right side.
Absolutely, and Ball State just couldn't convert there at the end. So it was 35-31. That was my lean. Kent Toledo had no idea. Toledo got out early, and then Kent came all the way back. Yeah. That was a very competitive game.
This season's a disappointment for Toledo.
Yep.
And they've had a lot of it's injury induced. I mean, you know, down to Eli Peters is the quarterback.
And he
now
can't run like Guadini, however you pronounce his name, Mitchell's his first name, who's a much better runner.
Yes.
And ever since he went down, I think it was that Kentucky game because I remember I had Toledo that week, and he went down, and they haven't looked the same.
All right. Don't forget wagertalk.com for all your handicapping needs. They are doing their videos today. They'll all be up on Wager Talk TV. Selections are available as well. I'm going to tell you about the only play I posted today because we're going to, so you don't have to buy it because I'm going to give it to you right here. It's our Lions Physical Therapy Play of the Day.
It's the LPT Play of the Day. Tonight's best bet from Lions Physical Therapy, your 5-star rated specialists.
Yeah, Wes, so I'm going to go back to this Virginia Syracuse game. And look, I don't get these right all the time, but it is. There are games where I guess you can call it, for lack of a better phrasing, fishy lines. Lines that look trappy to me. And this one falls into that category. I think it's real easy for the market to take Virginia in this game -3. The national champion Syracuse is outside the top 50 in the KenPom rankings, so, you know, they're not supposed to be a great team.
Mm-hmm.
So why is the line 3, and why hasn't it moved? It hasn't. I think Syracuse +3 gets the money.
and you lose Ty Jerome and Kyle Guy. That's a hell of a backcourt to lose if you're Virginia. So Kehi Clark's got a lot of potential, but now he's got to transition to being the man when he was kind of the supplementary piece last year. And against Syracuse in that extended 2-3 zone, not an easy challenge first out of the box.
Thanks to Kenny White. Follow him on Twitter at KWhiteyVegas. Follow Wes Reynolds at WesReynolds1. Follow me at Dave Koken. Tomorrow, Dave Sharapan behind the counter Thursday with Jim Feist joining me. Jared Justice, outstanding job in the production. We got Cofield and Company coming up next here on the Sports Leader. We hope you'll stick around with three more hours of dynamite radio here on ESPN Las Vegas. Have a good one.